Hari Om Sahana Vavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahaviryam Karavavahai Tejasvinavaditamastu Ma Vidvishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sarigaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Page 5, chapter 64. After King Riga had told his story, he offered prayers to Lord Krishna and then mounted a celestial airplane, which transported him to heaven. Lord Krishna then instructed his personal associates, as well as the general mass of people, on the dangers of stealing a Brahmin's property. Finally, the Lord returned to his palace. Shloka Anusharanam, summary of verses 1 to 9. The Yadava princes discover a huge lizard in the well. 10 to 24, King Riga's story. 25 to 30, King Riga offers prayers to Lord Krishna. 31 to 44, Lord Krishna instructs the royal order. Verses 1 to 9. The Yadava princes discover a massive lizard in the well. Sri Bhadarayani said, O king, one day, Shamba, Parjumna, Charu, Banu, Gada, and other young boys of the Yanu dynasty went to a small forest to play. So we see here, now we've taken all the way back to Vyasadeva.
Yeah, Vyasadeva is speaking to whom?
Mm-hmm. Probably to Parikit. I mean Sugadeva.
Yeah.
But the point is the story goes back to Vyasadeva. So a few verses here and there, you see Vyasadeva himself is speaking. Like the introductory verses of the Bhagavatam, and then here and there, especially in those first couple of chapters. Then now and again when we're going through the stories. Like that. Then it'll go back to, Sukadeva Goswami said, and then sometimes Suta Goswami said. So you can work on any of these three levels. And then you have the stories that are going on, therefore then Markandeya and Vidura and like that. So like this, you have many layers of the story. That's then how the Purana works, is that you have a story, and if there's something to explain at that point, then you go into explaining it. And then having come to that point, then it'll go on to the next.
What is the purpose of going back to different speakers? Like if Shukdev
What's the point of going back to different speakers? Because you bring out different elements. Different elements that are there, different angles, something to introduce, and it also just keeps you awake. The whole point of the Purana is that it's interesting. So that variety, the levels and all that, that's just how it's used. You know, the more complex the story, then there's like in the different plays, depending on what you have. So in the Sanskrit, the drama means there's 12 acts. So that means you have a main plot, you have a subplot, and then you have, you know, actors, you know, in each one of them and so many things, so it becomes quite complex. So that's it. But you also have simple, just one act plays. So it's just that this is, you know, the full thing. So then you have all these levels. Srila Jiva Goswami comments, having shown the power of Krishna in defeating Shiva, Sukadeva now relates a story somewhat related. It is not told in order. This event happened before the birth of Aniruddha, since Parjumna would have to be in his yauvana age to have Aniruddha as his son. They are also described in this verse as Kumara, and because they were attached to playing, they must have been in the middle of their Kumara period. Yeah. Since Samba and others are also mentioned, he was in Dwarka, not Rukmi's city, where Aniruddha was born. This incident must have happened just after the return from Sambara's city. Sukadeva addresses Parikit in amazement that a small sin of King Nriga could have such effects, or he calls to him to remove the details of the previous pastime and concentrate on the present pastime. Bhadaraini continued. After playing for a long time, they became thirsty. Or it means Bhadaraini means Sukadev. In this case, it's just another name for Sukadev. It means Sukadev. Yeah. As they searched for water, they looked inside a dry well and saw a peculiar creature. The boys were astonished to behold this creature, a lizard who looked like a hill. They felt sorry for it and tried to lift it out of the well. They caught on to the trapped lizard with leather thongs and then with woven ropes, but still they could not lift it out. So they went to Lord Krishna and excitedly told him about the creature. Right? Because also, if he says here they're Kumaras, so that means they're quite small. So one is that it's the size of a mountain for them being this big, you know, so it still means it's big. But the point is because they're small, then they can't lift it out. And so then they're excited, they go to Krishna and everything like that. The lotus-eyed Supreme Lord, maintainer of the universe, went to the well and saw the lizard. Then with his left hand, he easily lifted it out. Touched by the hand of the glorious Supreme Lord, the being at once gave up his lizard form and assumed that of a resident of heaven. His complexion was beautifully colored like molten gold, and he was adorned with wonderful ornaments, clothes, and garlands. Lord Krishna understood the situation, but to inform people in general, he inquired as follows. Who are you, O greatly fortunate one? Seeing your excellent form, I think you must surely be an exalted demigod. By what past activity were you brought to this condition? It seems you did not deserve such a fate, O good soul. We are now eager to know about you, so please inform us about yourself. So he's such a great personality as a devata, right? Then it doesn't appear that these things should happen to him, right? So then, you know, why that's there. So he's bringing this all out to show it doesn't matter how great you are, then you have to be very careful about, you know, offending Brahmins, stealing from Brahmins, all these kind of things.
Yeah. Krishna knows everything. So
right.
Is it he's just bringing this out so that he gives the glory to the devotee?
But just so the devotees are informed on this. He wants everybody to appreciate about how, because everybody knows about the position of Brahmas, but he wants to just bring it out more to make it established very nicely. Like that. But the point is he knows everything or doesn't know everything as he likes. So in this case, he knew what was the background, but he wanted to inform others. Right? So that way it just brings more emphasis to it. Because in general, you don't have to mention that Krishna already knew. But you do here because that means he really wanted people to understand this. Because otherwise, if it just unfolded, it'd just be another pastime. But this, you can see, it's a pastime that's based around an instruction. We are eager to know about you, so please inform us about yourself. If, that is, you think that this is the proper time and place to tell us. So that's another thing you see in the culture, is that inquiring, then it should also be if it's appropriate for the situation, what they know, because I don't know something. So how much I don't know, I don't know. Right? So I'm thinking it's just one thing, but it could be so many things. So if it's appropriate, then you please explain. This thing, the demand, though, we have to know, it's my right to know and all this, that's not a Vedic tradition. Because then, you know, the individual is there, they have more of an understanding of their situation. Yes?
So, when we approach a spiritual master or a teacher, for that matter, you know, in a stressful condition and then without all those cultural preliminaries, we just throw everything on him.
Yeah, but then it's a matter of whether he answers or not. So this would be an example of another aspect of the culture. You'd see if it's appropriate time for you to say all these things. But then it's also a matter of whether they feel it's an appropriate time to answer. Because otherwise, sometimes I've seen is they people go and they present something, they ask a question, and they expect they're going to get an answer. And then if you don't give an answer, then that's another thing.
But then they're more stressed.
Yes, but the point is it's still, it's not the appropriate situation. Just because they're distressed doesn't make it the principle to work on. Let's say I do things properly, then people appreciate that. I don't do things properly, it doesn't so much work out. But if, let's say, in that improper, that results, then someone is, interactive at that point. And so being interactive, then they, then we get some attention, we get, dealt with and all that. So then I've seen that sometimes a phenomena comes up where people will find something wrong just so they can interact. So it becomes the basis of the relationship that something's wrong. So that everything's all right, that's not, what's the point of interacting? So it's they base the whole relationship on something's wrong. So even though there's nothing wrong, they'll create something wrong. Or something that's not very big, they'll turn it into something big. Just so that there can be a discussion. So the whole point is it's not that because we feel it's necessarily that's the right situation for it. This idea about it's all about ourselves, but then, 7 billion people, it's all about themselves, it doesn't really work. That's called anamoy. We're thinking, oh no, but then I'll blame the person based on pranamoy. I came with a question, he didn't answer, and this and that. But, they'll present it as if it's something, glorious, that I came with this, I was distressed, and then they didn't do this and that and all that, and so it's against the social etiquette. Well, they came and just decided that they're going to be the center of attention, whether it warranted it or not. So they came in on anamoy, and then now they'll blame the person on pranamoy? They don't have that right. On anamoy, you can blame on anamoy. If you're working on prana, you can deal with that. You can't use a higher one when you're using a lower one. And then you'll say, no, but they're supposed to be at the higher one. Yeah, but then if they are at the higher one, we're not to judge. Because they may have deemed that it's not the appropriate situation. So it's still, this point stands, that you still are, this is my problem, so if you think it's, appropriate, you please answer. Not that right now you have to answer when they have other things that they're supposed to do, other commitments and all that. But you came now, they didn't give the time, they could have given the time. We don't know. We say these things. Does that make sense? That's the difficulty with these modern positions, is that the principle of respecting authority is not there. We do have the principle of authority, but the authority is my mind. And so that I respect. My mind feels like this, and I respect that, and that you're not respecting it, that's a fault. Because it's my mind. Why aren't you respecting? So in its essence, it'll still be there, but in the cultural reality, it's not. So it's just a matter of, what's appropriate and what's that, because it may be it's not for them to hear, or it may be it's not a topic they want to discuss, or... Does that make sense?
Yeah. Another point, sometimes devotees, they bring controversial, issues.
Yeah, yeah.
Just to create that intense energy.
Yeah, yeah. It's really annoying.
It's not...
really annoying. I had somebody do that to me when I was in the Pujari room. We were arranging the deities for Chandan Yatra. And we're there, and the person comes in and starts one of those. Until I'm yelling and screaming, and Janani has to come over and says, "You're in the deity room, no yelling here." He gets so carried away. It's just, it's just energy. They just are energy, how you say?
Vampires?
Yeah, like that. Yeah, in this case, it's energy vampires, not emotional vampires, like that. The other, that emotion, they're really tough, those ones. It doesn't matter what you say, it's wrong. They're always the victim, whichever way you take it. They're just going to get, they're just, like that. So,
The whole nation is like that. The whole nation is like that.
There's another thing. That it works, it goes back and forth. So everybody gets some blood, right? So all these things, so that's why in the Vedic, that's why we're saying it gets distorted. it's considered a relationship, but it's a distorted relationship. It's not actually based on the principle of the actual interaction between the two people. It's just what you want to get out of the interaction, not what's appropriate or right for the interaction. So that's the thing in the Vedic, is that the quality of the interaction will be better because it's restricted to just what it's actually for. And if we take it beyond that, then it's not necessary. We try to push it beyond, but it's not necessarily there. So someone may be kind and let it go beyond, but it's not that it should always be like that. We take it for granted, yes, it should be like this, rather than that was exceptional, and then we try to base the relationship on that. So we have to be careful, is that we have to see the situation we're in, the people we're dealing with, you know, what is the topic we have, you know. So that's the whole thing. So, you know, of course, of all of them, the cliche is the Americans deal with everything at any time. The most intense time, then they deal with the most intense topics, you know, like that. So it's you know, like that. You know, so from there, I guess it's there. So if, in other words, I have an intense topic. This is an intense time. So intensity with intensity, hey, it's a match. You know, like that. You know. But it's not necessarily. And then if you tell them that, go, man, I'll shave. No, but I was just trying to ask, you know. You know, like that. They immediately go from, you know, the aggressor into the victim, you know, whichever works best. That's the... Okay. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, thus questioned by Krishna, whose forms are unlimited, the king, his helmet as dazzling as the sun, bowed down to Lord Madhava and replied as follows. He's American?
No.
Oh. Okay. No, I just... like that. Srila Jiva Goswami comments. The word sma means well known. The word king is used in deference to this previous position, since his lizard condition was no longer visible. Krishna had a form, so when he's asking the king about his position, but he meant as a lizard, not as now. Right? Because he already addressed that, you know, in this glorious position, then how did that condition come up?
It's because this king is working on the form of karma and pious things that he has to get everything perfect, like when
yes.
chanting the...
Yes, that's means if you, if you're trouble. Dealing in material, it has to be materially perfect. Mm. If you're dealing in bhakti, the material aspect doesn't have to be perfect,
okay.
right? But you can't say, therefore we don't need to endeavor. Then where's the bhakti? How is the bhakti expressed unless we're trying to make it perfect?
Yeah.
In other words, bhakti is you try to make it perfect. Whether it becomes perfect or not, that's not the important thing. We're trying to make it perfect.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the bhakti that Krishna has reciprocated. But on the material platform, unless it is perfect, it doesn't work.
Yeah. That's why it's such an intense reaction.
Yes. Yes, you may have, the emotion is right, but the form is not right on the material platform, so that may be taken, there may be some grace there. But because we're talking about ritual, so unless the ritual is perfect, the ritual doesn't give the result.
Mm-hmm.
It's like that. It's like a recipe. You don't follow the recipe, you don't get the result.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Srila Jiva Goswami comments. Oh no, we already did that. The Krishna had a form of complete happiness, Ananda Murtina. Just by seeing the Lord and then by being questioned by him, the king experienced bliss, right? Because he was looking for the bliss of the heavenly pleasures. And so by seeing Krishna, then he gets that material, that spiritual bliss. Because that's actually where it comes from. Instead of Ananda, form with eternal powers. Sometimes Ananda is seen. By such an appearance of the Lord, the king became astonished, right? Because the eternal powers means you could be looking at the unlimited powers. But the point is it's the powers that create the bliss. Because bliss is based on the interaction between Krishna and the devotees. Mm-hmm. That's what causes bliss. Mm-hmm. Right? So therefore, that Krishna's energies are there and are non-different, then there'll be a certain amount of bliss, but it's basically a neutral bliss, a Brahmananda, or the Atmarama. So Krishna expands the devotees, his energies, so that then they can interact with him, and that increases the bliss. Right? Does that make sense? Yes.
Yesterday we discussed that bliss actually it's not happiness or distress.
Yes.
It's all empty.
Yes.
And then Krishna.
It comes through the forms of happiness or distress. In other words, bliss manifests through happiness or through distress, but it's still bliss. So if that point's understood, then we don't get bent out of shape about the feelings of separation.
Yes. Yeah.
Because it's still bliss. It's just a different flavor of bliss. You know, it's just like, let's say there's excitement, or there's sentiment, or there's, determination. They're all different flavors of, let's say, focus. Right? That one's very focused on something. And so that by being focused, then you get some taste, you get something from it, and a good experience. So you could say as far as experience goes, these are all experiences. Right? And so when we're talking about bliss, it's all bliss. It just has many facets to manifest through. So we look at that happiness is the ultimate thing. Bliss is the ultimate thing. Happiness is one of the forms of it, because we think happiness is what's nice in the material world and distress is not, because distress is the distress. Happiness is the removal of the distress. But the point is that when you're talking about bliss, that's something beyond removal of distress. So not being with Krishna, you remove that, you are with Krishna, that's happiness. But the point is it's the bliss of being with Krishna. So you're just like remembering him even in separation. You're with Krishna, so there's bliss. But it takes the form of separation because he's not physically present. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Because Krishna is called Ananda Chinmaya Rasa. So he's the embodiment of that bliss.
Yes.
So how is it that we can experience that bliss?
Because we're part of him.
So it's our nature.
It's our nature. That's why the soul is Sat Chit Ananda. But the point is that bliss, it can only be experienced in connection with him. So the minimum is the neutral state where we're just situated on the spiritual platform, you know, in the Sandini potency, where we're experiencing the eternalness. But it's him that's the eternalness. Like when we see something and it just this is so fabulous because you're touching the eternal. Right? Means, let's say, just for an example, a very nice, beautiful scenery. You know, very overwhelming, like, you know, full, you know, 360 degrees. You know, you come up the thing and then you're standing on this, you know, rock, and on this rock you can see everything and the sunset, you know, as far as you can take it. Right? So, then one may feel that eternal aspect. One's not identifying as that. We're just saying beauty, but you're experiencing the eternality of beauty. So that's technically what you call a moment. Right? And you only get it for a moment. So the thing is then we're thinking it's the view, the senses touching the sense objects. No, it's that in that you are able to appreciate the eternalness of the quality of beauty that comes, that's there in Brahman. Does that make sense? So it's only up to the Brahman level. Does that make sense? You know, or there might be the thing of, you know, how Krishna God created everything and all that, so you may catch the Paramatma level. But you're getting the eternalness and that, you know, that grandeur of the Lord, that the Lord of the controller of the opulences. For the general people, it'll just be the Brahman plan, because everything is coming from Brahman. The qualities of Brahman are what are pervading everything here. And so then you do everything properly according to the laws governing that particular medium, then you may experience something. That's how mechanically the material world and experience is working. But the point is it's Krishna. Right? And so we take it as so great. But that's just that level. When you deal with the person, then you're dealing with the Ichashak, you're dealing with the Hladi, the internal potency there, the Prayojana. So that's going to be so much greater, unlimitedly greater. Does that make sense? So that's the whole point, is that that bliss is that you catch a little bit of the resonance. We have something there, therefore we can resonate with those aspects of Krishna, Brahman, Paramatma, or Bhagavan. So what's being mentioned is that with Bhagavan, and that is appreciated through prema, that resonance of happiness with it, because Krishna is unlimitedly happy. It will feel that. So in other words, the unlimited bliss of Krishna, the happiness of the unlimited bliss of Krishna as unlimitedness is has a particular level. It's not as great as then he is the regulator of all his energies. And it's not as great as the enjoyer and pastimes of his energies. So it just becomes greater. And so when we don't follow the rules, we don't follow that, we're not actually even though we're interacting with Krishna as Brahman, we're just seeing the secondary because it's not field. And so therefore you don't get much out of it. So it's those moments that people experience that makes their whole life, makes their whole everything that they do special, that makes history. You know, everything great that we talk about and write down and document, and it's all a moment. Because at those moments you're touching Krishna. But we don't know it. We're touching him all the time, but we're not aware of it. But when we're aware of it, then that becomes a moment that changes your life, or that you influence others. You did something that was special and people now are still talking about it. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like, whatever. All the senators are stabbing
Caesar.
Right? It's an annoying. You know, it's making him angry. But it's not getting any farther than that. But when Brutus comes up, then that's a moment. Because of the whole thing, the only thing that's remembered is that moment when Brutus comes. Because then it's friendship, being like that, then it takes on that eternal thing of just that distress of that, you know, the loss of friendship, or the breaking of friendship. Or being, I can't remember, think of the term, but just where you go against a friend.
Betrayal.
So then he's experiencing that unlimited aspect of betrayal. You know? No, it's just a form here. But in that, he's experiencing that unlimited aspect. He's touching Brahman there. So therefore, it's such a great moment that here, 2,000 years later, that's one of the few things we'll talk about. You know, Brutus, and that he came, he saw, and he conquered. Right? And did we miss anything? Like that. We'll leave out the part about the Gauls, right? You know, like that. Certainly. So, oh yeah, and then was it the Rubicon or something? And you know, like that. There's these moments where something is done, where that greatness of the Lord and how he pervades everything in that particular quality, and that's what makes everything, that makes your day, makes the life, makes, you know, people are still talking about it, you know, like now it's probably a bit late, but probably they're, you know, they're, who knows how old they are this time, but I know I remember seeing some pictures of it like maybe 10 years ago or so, 15 years ago, where they have the remembrance of raising of the flag in Okinawa. You know, you have that famous thing where they're all 10 guys that are raising the flag, you know, like things like that. And they have all the guys there. I think they're all in wheelchairs and stuff like that. You know, in their uniform and stuff like that. Because it was a moment. And so even 50, 60 years later, there's still, it's still the moment, you know. So that's the whole thing, is that it's all based on these, it's touching Krishna. And so it's just a matter of how much you're touching Krishna. So that's as far as you can get if it's not non-theistic. If it's theistic, then you can touch the Paramatma aspect. But only when it's devotional, then you'll taste the Bhagavan aspect. So
all we need is a moment with Krishna.
That's it. Because that moment will attract us. That's why you see, even with Narad Muni in the previous life, then there's that moment where Krishna speaks to him. And then he's remembering that for his whole life. Or Parikshit Maharaj, he sees Krishna in the womb. And that moment of just him there and his Sudarshan Chakra. So that's what you're trying to get. You're trying to get to that, and from that then you expand it until that's always the situation. So prema means that situation is perfect. I mean permanent. So that's the process that we're going through. So all these things are just different angles to try to find something that we catch. Something to attract us to Krishna, something to make that important, to give up the material, for that moment, forget the material. So all these different angles and aspects and stories and are all there for that.
Does that make sense?
And in the process, then we learn how to apply things, we gain knowledge, we gain, different things we gain, but it's actually just to attract us to Krishna. That's why it says he performs his pastimes, just to attract the minds of the devotees. And so that's on any level, from the basic sadhana up to someone in prema. It's all still attraction of the Lord. To the Lord, excuse me.
And he's all attractive.
Yes, he's all attractive. So does that make sense? Yeah.
Maharaj, you mentioned that bliss is the ultimate goal, so therefore bliss is the prayojana. And
bliss is the prayojana, but we have to see. Oh, go ahead, finish your question.
Yeah. So you mentioned earlier about Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavatam, and CC, wherein Bhagavad Gita is Sambandha, then Avideya is Bhagavad Gita.
It's prominent, it's not that it's just that.
Yeah, prominent.
Yes.
So then, if it is prominent that CC is Prayojana, then can we not start with CC and then go to Sambandha Avideya? Because that is what was being.
Can we not start with the Prayojana and then go back to Gita?
Because when the goal has been shown, it's become.
The goal has been shown, but the goal has been shown in Bhagavad Gita.
Yeah, but.
Point is how do you taste something that you don't have a taste for?
Because. Very senior devotee said that it's always good to start with CC, then go with Gita and then Bhagavatam. Then you'll be able to apply it into your life.
Okay, so this is. If you want to get a good result for your question, start with the question. Right? So I know what the actual doubt is. The doubt is, other devotees have said that you start with CC because that's where the taste is, and then by that, getting that taste, then you go back to Gita and then move forward. But I said that we're starting with Gita and then going to Bhagavatam and then going to Chaitanya Charitamrita. So then the doubt is who's right here? Am I right or is that other guy right?
No, both are right. But then which is...
but the point is here, like this. So you understand... The question, this is what we're dealing with here. So if you just say, somebody's mentioned like this and so like that, so we understand what we're talking about. And then you said, because you start with, you said, I said so many things. I said, the pot wasn't cleaned yesterday for cooking. I also said that, which I said, and then you get into that, and then what's the context? So we have to sit there and, on pins and needles until we get to the point. Then we find out is, okay, I said this, someone else said something different. And so then, how does this work? How do you reconcile these two? You understand? If you start that way, it makes it, because otherwise the tendency is, I'll start as we go on there, because you're using it in one context, but how you're presenting it is not necessarily in that context yet. So then I'll start to react to how it's used in the point of the discussion that you're presenting it. Rather than I know the context and then it goes through. That's why it's never good to start with, you said. Because if you say, you said, I was thinking about it yesterday, because I've been hearing it for like 20 years. Yesterday I figured out when someone says, you said, that means it's a doubt. Because as you said, that means they're going to get to the point where there's a contradiction. You said this and now, or you said that, or you said this, someone else said that. Because yesterday I was thinking about, why does, when they start with "you said," I always find it, you know, not a nice approach.
Just to clarify, when I said it, I didn't start with that, but I said it to establish.
But still, it's about "I said," "you said," "he said."
I know you thought that, but I said it to establish you as the authority, because you're saying, well, when you say blah, 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 I'm like, I'm not the one who's saying it. You said it.
Yes, but then you'll bring up the doubt, and so therefore you're the authority. You said it, so therefore it's you're wrong, not me, because I had the
my mood at all.
Yeah. The point is we're just trying to show the etiquette of asking questions.
Yes.
See, this thing is that, no, but I didn't mean it that way. But the point is that's what you used. It's like the boy actually didn't mean, he actually has great affection for the girl, but she misinterpreted his throwing rocks at her, his dipping her pigtails into the ink bottle, him tripping her, all that, but it was just, he was just trying to express himself of how much he finds her attractive. So does that go down well? No, it's like he's got to learn how to properly express. Okay, that's what he wants to express. Learn the actual form. That's what we're saying here. Is that we're not saying that the intent is wrong, like that. We're just saying that the form, when it's made into an emotional question rather than an intellectual question, then it makes it harder to deal with. Because then the emotions that were used to establish it become the prominent feature rather than just the point. This is there, that's there. These two seem to be contradictory. Like you see, when Prabhupada brings up a doubt, when he's specifically doing in his purport, he'll go, "Some may say."
Yes.
So he starts with what the other person has said. That creates the doubt, because we've already said what we said. They've said this, and so in that context, then what you've said now doesn't seem to. How does that work? Does that make sense? It's just a slightly different. It's just reversing the approach. It just makes it work a little bit better. Yes.
Otherwise, also it might sound like, how is it that you speak at all? It's very offensive.
It can be, but what she's pointing out is it can have a range where you're established, you said this, and so that means that's authority in that, but at the same time it's a doubt, so better show the doubt. And then, but now you said this, so could you clarify, accepting as an authority, you said this, how does this apply to that, rather than you've said this and that's that, and so who's wrong? That's generally what it comes out as. You know, or it's that, well, I found something that's, you know, I came up with something that's different, so therefore you must be wrong. That's the generic, that's the modern approach. Is that intellectual means finding a fault in someone else. That's all.
Sometimes Prabhupada just says there are some philosophers who say like these.
Yes, that's the whole point, is you start with the point that's there, and so then you bring it out. That's what I'm saying, is you start with the doubt. And then, because that's what Vishaya is the doubt. The one sentence doubt. Right? Then they'll have their explanation of that. Right? Then they explain that and give their examples and everything. Just like we have our thesis. Then we explain all that. Right? Does that make sense? So unless you're dealing with an emotional thing that you want to bring it, but then you have to be sensitive to the emotional thing and not use like that. Because sometimes somebody may not take it straight because it itself is too much of a difficulty. So you come around until you get it to the point where it can be discussed. That also can be used. So it's not that the mental approach isn't useful. It's only useful when the intellectual may not work because of emotion. But otherwise, then the intellectual is the best platform.
I think this is taken from the common people talks, they talk like
that. Yeah, of course. Because it's about the emotional experience you'll get from it.
And they think this is straight talking or something.
They think it's straight, but straight talking generally is blunt talking.
Yeah.
And then if you blunt talk back, it doesn't work very good. Like that.
Mm-hmm. So, coming back to my question.
So what's the question?
question is about, you know, one devotee said about start beginning with prayojana, start with CC. Okay,
and then?
And then you can do it, Bhagavad Gita should be last, then Bhagavad Gita.
Then Bhagavatam, then Gita is last. Yeah. And then what's the reasoning? That's the thesis. What's the reason?
Because we make the devotees experience, you know, what exactly is the bliss of Krishna consciousness through.
We make them experience the bliss of Krishna consciousness.
So once consciousness. They know that, then they can see in Bhagavatam how it has been applied.
Okay.
And then in Bhagavad Gita, we study the actual tattva. So then
and then it ends there.
Yeah, it doesn't end there, then again it goes back to prayojana. So okay. That is cyclic.
That's cyclic.
Yeah. So then.
And where are they getting the example of it? Where is this used?
They may be applying it in their own life.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, okay, in their own life it works, it's nice, but then how? Why would they say it's a universal when Prabhupada said Bhagavad Gita is the ABCs?
Okay, so that means they go against Prabhupada's teachings.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Point is that the philosophy is all based on that. It's not that Chaitanya Charitamrita can't be there, but the point is their study is going to be at the Bhagavad Gita level. Otherwise, why did Prabhupada give it Bhakti Shastri, Bhakti Vibhava, Bhakti Vedanta, Bhakti Sarvabhauma, if that's not the way to study it? But that you try to give someone a taste in Krishna consciousness, then that's fine. Because the mind, seeing something, there's an interest, then you have to create need. Then if there's need, then you want to know the subject matter. So that's how the mind works. But it's based on that. But as far as study goes, then you do it the other way. You wouldn't sit down with a new Bhaktist and do a, you know, so many years study of Chaitanya Charitamrita, then go back. You wouldn't do that. But it's not that you wouldn't be reading stories from Chaitanya Charitamrita as part of the thing, but the study would be Bhagavad Gita. You know, it's like devotees would read Krishna book, like in the evening. They would take milk and read Krishna book and then go to bed. It gives a taste. But the point is anywhere you taste, it will be nice. So if you start at Gita, it's also nice. You know, so if this individual doesn't find that as much of a taste, that's okay, but it's not that others don't. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So it's not, but as far as study course goes, you have to put it in the order that Prabhupada gives it. But as far as exposing them to these things, why not? See, that works so much more quickly and easily. Yes. So that's how it should work.
I was thinking about there's a very good book, like for Govinda Maharaj.
Oh, exactly. There's a good book. Yeah, it's called, yes. You know the good book. Yeah.
Pariprashna, it's an art of not to ask questions of spiritual master.
Oh, okay, nice.
It's a small book, but, you know, it gives a good...
Oh, okay, that's interesting.
Yeah, it's based on his classes.
Oh, and just how he's explained things, so someone's compiled it together to explain it.
Yeah, to explain how to approach, how to ask, okay. So like that. Yeah. What's the art?
Yeah.
It's very helpful, actually.
Yeah, that's nice. Okay, cool. Mm-hmm. Yes.
What should be done with those questions?
What should be done with those questions? Well, from what I've understood from my contemplation yesterday. No, was it yesterday? The day before, yes, that's it. So, that, it takes two things. It takes time and it takes patience. Which is the problem. This is where the problem comes in. Is that you have to wait until they finish the question, and then what they finish the question with, it also requires memory. So then what you finish the question, then you actually understand what the question is. Then you have to reverse engineer it back to what they started in the beginning, because they're not going to do that for you. It means you have to remember all that. And then having remembered all, have the patience to heard that, then go back through all that, then reorganize it like that, then you apply it to the question. But you talk about the final point that they did, because that's actually the question. Because if you talk about anything in between, all you get is, that's not what I'm saying. That's all you get. So you have to wait until there. So that's why we see is that so much of the time that these big questions are asked, huge questions are asked, and they wait until they finish. And then it's sometimes said that then, you know, whoever was the speaker, then they took a moment to reflect, and then they spoke. because then they have to take all that, put it all together. So if we're going to use what the acharyas do, then it works. So if you use the, New York one-liner, first out of the gate, in the horse race one, it works if people have no authority issues like that. They worked really good before because you could cut through the whole thing and just deal with the essence. But because it wasn't seen the process to get to there, then you didn't have to explain it. Now you do. People don't accept authority like that. So therefore, if you go straight to the essential point, the person themselves doesn't even know what the essential point is. That's why they started that way. There's a feeling. It's an experience. So they're trying to express that. And the longer it takes, then the more the question. And then when it gets to what I call the community question, where people have to actually help the person ask the question, then you know it's really bad. So then you have to just wait till the final thing, and then best leave the whole thing, leave everything before, and that final point that they made. Answer that, but in a mood that matches just what they did at the end. And finesse all the rest of it. Because you can't deal with it, because it's too emotional.
Can we say that even emotional questions should be still answered with tattva?
Yes, but you want to use, let's say, the medium or expression or tone of voice that will work within emotion. It's just like what we're saying. But how rasa works is that whatever's the medium used by the devotee, that's what's reciprocated. Because in here, then you're dealing with masculine and feminine principle. So the masculine has to respond according to the feminine approach. So that's just how it works. Yeah. Does that make sense?
It's very difficult. It's very difficult.
Yeah, so that's why then the teacher has to be respected, because that's what they have to deal with.
Especially listen to all those questions and remember them.
Yes. And the amazing thing is it's also a latitudinal thing. Like once you go north of the Volga, then it gets even more intense. Yeah. And also there's probably a longitudinal aspect also, because once you cross partway beyond the Urals and it goes into Siberia, the problem comes a little less. Like that, because there it's like you don't have time to ask a long question because you might freeze to death. So they're much more quick on they're more practical. Sitting in the warmth of their home in Moscow than they got all day. So. You had something? Yeah. No.
They don't have caffeine, Siberia.
There's not, Or the point is, you'd have to go out, get the wood, make the fire, build it up, then get the water, then, so therefore, yeah. So better they just ask a question.
Yeah. It seems that in the Gita and Bhagavatam, and in Shatamana, it's always. All the devotees were asking questions, they know how to ask questions.
Yes, but you notice who's asking questions. Now, you have all the sages at Naimisharanya who ask the questions. One person.
Only one person.
Sukadeva Goswami speaking, everybody's there. Who's asking questions? Only Parikkhit.
Yes.
So that's the whole thing, is that our forum that we use is anybody can ask a question. It means we could easily limit it to only registered students could ask a question. Yes. And even then, only students who are on this, now we're on the Bhaktivedanta level, those who are only on this level can ask a question.
Yes.
It would solve so much. It would solve so much problem. But we leave it open, but the point is there's still the responsibility of the person asking the question to actually ask a question that's valuable for everyone rather than just themselves. Because sometimes you see people will follow a line, like you see now and again, managers will show up to the class. they'll only, and they'll be quiet, but as soon as it touches on anything, Varnashram with management, immediately they have questions, and they'll just go on and on and on until you get it to the point of answering their problem that they had with the local authorities and the GBC. Once you get it to that level, they're satisfied, then they don't come back for some weeks or months until another question comes up. Right? You know, so then the difficulty is you have to ask in a way it's for everyone. That's why you see is that even when the question is asked nicely, then that appreciation. Like Narad Muni asked the question, the Brahma says, that's a good question. Or Arjuna asked, he says, that's a good question. Or Sukadeva asked, Parikshit Maharaj asked Sukadeva, says, that's a good question. Because it applies to the individual, but it's asked in such a way that it makes it universal in application. So that, you could say, is the best question. But at least, even if it's about just your own understanding, that's fine, because that's what the Course is about. But it should be that the question itself is clear. We don't try to hide the emotional elements like that. Or just leave it. If we're not going to address the emotional elements, that we're not going to make them obvious, we shouldn't bring it up. We shouldn't. It's not our business here to play a guessing game to figure out the person's emotions and backgrounds and the particular thing when they were small and they were in this situation and this person did this to them and all that, and you're not addressing that actual experience that they're getting, but because that's why they're asking the question, but they're not about to say that because of their own shyness or own because it's no one else's business or whatever's the reason. But you have to figure it out, because if you're an authority, then it's your business to figure it out. That's not the business here, because it's a formal environment. It means I, as a teacher, have zero responsibility to deal with an individual's emotional needs on the emotional platform. This is not the forum for it. That's called a personal relationship. This is a teaching environment. Here it is that it has to be useful for everybody in the room. That, so therefore, is I've had a particular experience. But there's a principle on which it's based. And this principle on which it's based can apply to other individuals. So I have to ask the question so that it is accessible to others. Otherwise, if it's not, then you'll see is that they keep asking the question. Everybody else is wondering, when is it going to get down back to the class?
Yes.
So that's that. That it has to be understood what's the circumstance. You know, so when we say patra, who's involved? What's the time and place? You have patra, means the people, but you have time and place. You're sitting talking to that person personally. Then the time and place is just, two people. And then, therefore, then the discussion, the patra, gets applied in a different way. But if the time and circumstance is the class with everybody, then its application has to be for everybody. So it's different. Because otherwise we can say, oh, but that's so impersonal, but we're all individuals. And yeah, but the point is that's it. We're all individuals. Right? Rather than we're all individuals. We are all individuals. That's where the culture breaks down, is because I'm an individual, therefore it's all about me. No, I'm an individual. Everybody else is an individual. So it has to be done in a way that it doesn't disturb everybody. It's useful. So in other words, that's where then one exercises the intelligence. That's the whole idea of a course, is that you get the opportunity to again and again use it and to develop the intelligence so that we can use it in this form to serve Krishna. And so then we learn how to ask a question. We learn how far to take a question. Mm-hmm. Like that. So that, yes.
All right, I suppose in what you're saying, as a student, my experience was that it's hard to find a forum that your answers are really answered like we find when you speak. So that emotional need automatically comes to the forum, and it's exercised to actually separate it over time. To
yes, but the point is as long as everybody has a few years to work that out, then it's fine.
Yeah.
You know, because that's the thing, it takes years. Yeah. So then, you know. Yes. Yes.
What you see here is a lot of the time the pastimes we'll see them, the nice stories, great great examples, but And also, it seems also in this discussion, a lot of the time we struggle with relevancy. Perhaps we'll separate the pastime, it's just a nice pastime, but then we won't bring it relevant to ourselves, and we won't see that. So how do we actually address that aspect so we make it personally relevant to ourselves?
Oh, that's why the commentaries of the Acharyas are there. Is that they're showing how it's useful for us. That's why the emphasis is on that aspect. Means we're technically not studying the Bhagavatam as such. We're studying the purports of Prabhupada and then the Acharyas in line with what Prabhupada says, or in view of what Prabhupada says. That's our study. The medium being used is the Bhagavatam. So since the Bhagavatam as a medium, then it gives all the perfect conclusions of the Vedic literatures. Therefore, everything about Krishna can be discussed in this forum. But we don't know. So the Bhagavatam is Krishna. We don't know Krishna. Mm-hmm. We know the Acharyas. And so, therefore, we will always know Krishna through the Acharyas. And if we think, okay, yeah, that's the beginning, but at some point then we'll know. But the point is we only know what we've learned from the Acharyas, so we still only see through their vision. But try to see that without the Acharyas, then that's the impersonalist. That you start with the Guru because you don't know much, but once you know everything, then you give up the Guru. So we have to be very careful of that. So it's always going to be that. So as we go, it becomes more fine. So we may have doubts in the beginning. On the Gita level, we don't understand Guru and the relationship and all this and how to practice. That's fine. But when we get up to this level, then it's already so fine. Then how can we can't not understand. So we don't discuss this level with somebody's new. This is that somebody's been through. We have to remember this is the second half of the Bhagavatam study. So then we're discussing at this level. But otherwise, if you have brand new people, you wouldn't discuss at this level. So even if you are starting with Chaitanya Charitamrita, you are only going through the stories and a few basic points of philosophy and basic points of culture. But you're not actually doing a study of Chaitanya Charitamrita until you've studied Bhagavatam. And how you study Bhagavatam unless you study Gita. So therefore there's a hierarchy as far as study goes. But as far as a taste and all that, then yeah, it's nice. You know, that's the thing. So what we see is that what Prabhupada gave originally is he gave the Krishna book. So you could get that taste of Krishna, but he explained it all. And then in Chaitanya Charitamrita, so the essence of the Bhagavatam he gave is Krishna book. But the essence of the Chaitanya Charitamrita wasn't a storybook. It was five conversations. Because with these five conversations, then you understand the Krishna book. You approach the Krishna book, what he's already given. Then it'll be... So if you read the Krishna book, and then read the teachings of Lord Chaitanya, then you'd have a very solid foundation. So technically, if you read Gita, Nectar of Devotion, you know, Krishna book, and these things, then in a nutshell, you would have a solid understanding. Now, then you should now go properly through Bhagavatam and then through Chaitanya Charitamrita. So you could do that as an essential study. Does that make sense? If you wanted to do it in that way. But we're not. So there's a difference in the study. Like that. Because if you notice, when we get down to doubts and all these different things are there, generally most of these doubts are Bhagavad Gita level. So how do you study it at the higher level? So and this is devotees who've been doing this for some time. But they quickly catch it and all that. Because when we are on the Gita level, one of these questions would take 2 weeks. So now that it goes through in 5 minutes, then we see that advancement is there. It's more, but still, the root is there. All these doubts go back to Gita, because it is the fundamentals, it's the ABCs. So it's not doubt. But we're discussing a Bhagavad Gita point, but on a Bhagavatam level. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that makes the difference in all these courses.
So it will always expand, Maharaj, until CC comes. from Gita point into Bhagavatam, it expands. And then
it expands more, yes. Because you'll see Chaitanya Charitamrita in the early chapters, it's discussing all those technical points that are in the first chapters of Bhagavatam. I mean the first cantos of Bhagavatam. You know, all the analytical, the second canto, third canto, that's all being discussed there. So it's the same thing, but now you're just on a higher level. The Bhagavatam is just what the Gita said, just on more levels. You know, like that. So, you know, the further expansion on the Gita, you know, in the first part, but once you've done 10th canto, then they do it again. And then, Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premananda.
Hare Krishna, may I have your attention? Just to note that there will be no classes next week for the whole week. We will resume on the 19th, which makes it week after, Monday. Usual timings, morning and afternoon classes.